Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, good morning. It's Dave Flyer back with you on 720 WGN. So Bill Curtis continues to keep himself busy as a journalist, producer, narrator, and America's original anchorman. The new season of American Greed is underway at CNBC, as well as Through the Decades, airing on CBS's digital sub-channel Decades. And honestly, he does, as I've said before, the best Bill Curtis impersonation that I know. That is Bill Curtis himself. Good morning, Bill.
I enjoy listening to that impersonation myself.
That's fantastic.
How are you, Dave?
I am wonderful, sir. I am wonderful, sir. I am really enjoying the new season of American Greed, and I just saw the whole Glinowitz story this last weekend.
It's quite something, you know, when you can we got it piecemeal. 3 minutes here, 2 minutes there, as it comes on the newscast.
Sure.
And there is a real strength in being able to see a story beginning to end just roll out in front of you.
Absolutely.
And that was so bizarre. You know, everybody was doing honor to this hero.
Yeah.
And he was spotless. You know, came in prior to his killing himself. You know, he came in and he was all sharp, with hardly a wrinkle in his uniform, and took the kids out, you know, into the woods.
Yeah, people trusted him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But one thing leads to another.
That's
the story of American Greed. That's a little different story for us. Usually we...
White collar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, our next episode is about a con man out of Kalamazoo who, you know, we all have that weakness that we want a deal. We want something for nothing. And beyond that, we want to put our money with someone who really knows what they're doing and ride the rocket and get
That's
those
right.
riches. Well, there was a guy who came in custom suits, drove a Ferrari outside, bought his wife a Maserati, lived in,
That's a sign right there.
Millions of dollar homes, and was living the lifestyle. And he collected $50 million from 400 investors, strictly on the strength of his presentation.
Wow.
And he said, you can trust me. I guarantee you that we will not lose any of your principal. This is safe. And what was the deal? It was investing in real estate. And, of course, he had a whole spiel on how real estate investment is the best, the safest you could possibly be. It's the survivor of all these recessions and depressions, you know, coming out of the 30s. And it built up over 6-7 years and until one investor began to ask questions.
So no documentation, no proof in the pudding of how he became financially successful or how he was helping others. His presentation, he was that slick.
He was that slick. And he said, look, if you want to see it, well, you can see it. But, of course, no one really asks for that.
Of course not, yeah.
And then the SEC begins looking, sent some investigators in, and he was living the high lifestyle. And he said, well, I had more money than I do now working on this company before we went in. In fact, he had none.
Wow.
And when they looked into the investments, he had two or three buildings. So it was a Ponzi scheme of sorts in which he took the investors' money and he had to keep taking investors in to pay off the interest for 400 of the other investors. But when the curtain was pulled back, he had nothing.
Wow. And you're really combing through the headlines, both nationally and regionally, to find these amazing stories.
They are amazing. We work a lot with the FBI. They want the word to get out. And if you stop and think about it, just telling the story. I sat there transfixed at the final product and realized, my God, I'm like that. I'd get into that.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I'd go for the presentation. And just to be careful with your money and who you're investing with.
Well, I would assume it would also be to dissuade those who are thinking about doing something like that, that they're going to get caught.
What a lesson. What a lesson. Yeah. Have you ever met a con man you didn't like? They are charming. they're super salesmen.
Yeah. Selling sand to the Sandman.
Exactly. Yeah. They are, and you like them. They're good looking, and they come in with those suits, and they have the presentation down and really sell you.
Sure.
But they're selling themselves in their scheme.
Investigative journalism. I mean, really, this started for you, and we were just talking with my son before we got started here. You were 16 years old. It was a KIND in Independence, Kansas, right?
Well, that's kind words for Southeast Kansas.
Yeah.
And that, in many ways, was the best experience that I got, because you did everything.
Right.
I had a wonderful boss, and you were a disc jockey, and I remember the preachers coming across from the Oklahoma. We were down by the Oklahoma line, and they would buy an hour's worth of time on the air, and they would come in and preach, and they'd just have a music stand, and they would open the Bible. They wouldn't have a script or anything, and they believed that the word came to them, and they would say, you know, whatever they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And soon they kind of went through their sermon, mm-hmm. and they would look over and see the young man in the studio and began praying for me and young man.
Wow.
And so it's but I did Little League baseball and basketball.
Yeah.
Where else can you really get that experience? I went on to college at University of Kansas, and they had classes and good people, but not the same kind of experience. I mean, you went down, and you may have gone to a visiting where the team was playing, the visiting team, and you'd plug in your little remote and set up your camera.
Sure.
I mean, set up your mic, and you would learn how to fill time.
Did you, at 16, did you have the pipes yet?
I had a start.
Okay.
And, you know, I can listen back.
Yeah.
And actually hear some.
Do you have some of that content?
Well, I have one.
Okay. All right.
And it was a competition in a disc jockey contest nationwide. And Coca-Cola was sponsoring sock hops.
Okay.
And so I was the only guy in town, and young enough, there's where youth really comes in handy. And I would go down, and so Coke would give you some stuff. And I had, you would know it was me,
mm-hmm.
you know. It wasn't the deep register that comes
with age. Yeah.
But I enunciated well. My parents, were from both Midwesterners. And when I got into high school, actually, and was, quote, broadcasting on the intercom, reading the announcements
right.
in the morning
yep.
for the whole school,
yeah,
I thought,
yeah.
oh, where's Hollywood? It's next.
That's awesome.
You have to eliminate those words
that
come along with your region. Washington is one. I'm going to go to Washington and see. And or the parking lot. And we have a lot of those little landmines hanging out there.
Yeah.
So, but and vehicle. You eliminate those along the way.
Sure. Now, did you, when you were younger, did you say, well, I want to, did you see the vision of where you would end up? Like, you wanted to be in New York, you wanted to be in L.A., or was Chicago kind of something that was a goal for you?
You know, I had not been to Chicago or New York at the age of 16, although I had moved 9 times, but it was back and forth between Marine bases, East Coast to West Coast. So I couldn't have that image, but I did have an image, and at 16, I saw Walter Cronkite, and he was on the air.
Sure.
And even though I knew that, that was probably too big out there to have a dream, I said, generally, that's the Emerald City for me, and I want to go in that direction. So, and this was, I thought, pretty smart. In your part-time job, yes, I worked for my dad in the oil fields, but I didn't take the soda jerk job. I wanted a job within the scope of my chosen path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would best is the radio. That's
sure.
direct.
Sure.
But something where you were speaking as often as you could, making
sure.
a presentation. And I, as a matter of fact, when I was a freshman, I'm sorry, when I was a senior at KU college, I went back and took debate, having to debate with the freshmen, those lowly, you know, I mean, what a come down. But you tuck it in and
it's
just
true.
To learn the the debate.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, and then you know, you got your law degree. And then did you start working for CBS nationally first when you covered Charles Manson?
Yes,
okay.
Manson, but that was in 1970.
Okay.
I got the law degree in 66. I was working for a couple of years through law school at the one radio TV station in town, WIBW. And literally, I was studying a tax review class, went out to fill in on the 6 o'clock news for a friend, and a tornado came through town. I was on the air.
While it was happening.
Having accepted a job with a law firm in Wichita, and the next day, or a couple days later, it was such an experience. I called and I said, nope, I chose the wrong thing. I'm not going to practice law. I'm going to stay in broadcasting.
But
and within 3 months, I was in Chicago.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. That's you send your tape out.
Yeah.
And it was with John Madigan who hired me over at WBBM.
Wow. That quickly. And nobody ever starts in a big you know, city like that,
yeah,
obviously.
You go to Kansas City.
That's right.
Or Wichita.
That's right.
And very often, I'm looking at this young man, your son.
My son Josh is joining us.
And halfway giving him some advice, I'm sure he doesn't need it.
Oh, yeah, believe me. He wanted to come down here and hang out. Josh, say hello. Mr.
Hello.
Curtis.
Hi, Josh. So traditionally, you go to the smaller markets and work your way up. Mm-hmm. And it works very well. And you don't have to have an agent, but these days a lot of people do. And they keep looking out and, well, let's move on. That was quite a jump from Topeka to
But
Chicago.
It gets helps you get your feet wet, and it helps you really kind of practice your craft before you make it to the big time.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
You get all your mistakes out.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to make mistakes.
That's true.
I think I was 26 when I came to Chicago and immediately started not only anchoring but working the street as a reporter. And it wasn't until age 33, I had done 3 years as a correspondent out of the coast, that I really came back to Chicago feeling as if I had
you were ready.
The cred.
Yeah,
You know, the street cred
sure,
to
sure.
tell someone else what I thought was going on in the world.
But looking at when you started at 16 years old in high school, and I said Josh was 14. He was a freshman when he started. I mean, you really want to get started at an early age and again, get your feet wet while you're in high school and doing some of those basic things in production and announcements and all those type of things like you did as well,
yep.
because it just helps you hone your craft by the time you get to college. It does.
As long as we're in this mentoring situation, you know, the voice is a muscle,
mm-hmm.
your vocal cords.
Right.
And they need to be used, just like your biceps, or you will lose them.
Right.
So I was lucky in that I started at 16, and with 6 months out for the Marines and a few other things, almost every day I was using my voice.
Talking, right.
Primarily mm-hmm. on radio and television, speeches or what have you. And so it kept it tuned. I didn't necessarily make it deeper, mm-hmm. but maybe a little. But it was just fine-tuned. I never smoked. Although I did some play-by-play, Little League baseball and, mm-hmm. you know, college basketball, never strained it and hurt it to the point where, you know, it wouldn't come back.
I think I've noticed, and I've been doing this for about 5 years, that's about it that I've been doing this, but I've noticed that if I listen to some of my early recordings,
I'm much higher.
Yeah.
I've somehow brought those levels down to where it sounds a little more comfortable on the radio. Yeah.
Ironically, you know, Walter Jacobson and I worked for about 9 years together, and I was in with CBS for 30 years and then started my own production company. So I got into the world of narrating documentaries. Mm. And you have a PBS style of narration, which is very, very straight. A former police officer turned insurance salesman, John Bravada, is blessed with the gift of gab. Or you have news, which would, you know, you have to sell it a little higher.
Right.
A former police officer today turned insurance salesman. Bravada is blessed with the gift of gab. And and then you realize that the timbre and the range, if you get a little closer to the microphone, if you go quiet, your voice will go deeper and more intimate.
And more captivating.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And you can use it, whether commercials or a murder show. My God, I did 100, maybe 200 murder mysteries, cold case files.
Yeah, of course. Oh, I love those. Absolutely.
And you just learn. It's like Michael Jordan, who said he didn't begin to learn how to play basketball until he hit the NBA.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. So you got to learn to bring your voice down just a little bit. You know what I'm saying,
relax.
Josh?
Yes, you always make fun of the deepness of my voice.
Well, and that's why you want to get your mistakes out of the way early, and especially mic fright, because that nervousness brings your voice up.
Right.
And you want to be able to play the piano without looking at the keys.
That's true.
That's essentially what it is.
No, I go down to the media room like kind of in a rushing kind of fashion so I can read over the script and kind of settle myself, make sure everything is in its place so I'm not stressed and no one else is.
Good.
So I can sit down, write any names I need to pronounce correctly or just take my time and read over what I'm about to speak.
Preparation. Very important. I met you, Bill. I think I was trying to think, probably about 10 years old. And I came to the 10 o'clock newsroom. So, I mean, this is the biggest newscast in Chicago. Oh. You, Walter, John Coughlin, Johnny Morris. I mean, this was it. And I watched it as a kid every night. We didn't have 300 channels to look at. We watched the 10 o'clock news on CBS. And I believe a family friend, neighbor, his name was Bill Ludwig. He was a camera operator, I think, for the station. He said, "Why don't you come down?" And I watched the entire thing with awe, and I really do believe that watching that newscast is what got me so interested in broadcasting
myself.
It was, yeah.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. There was an awe about it. We only have, I think, three or four. Throw WGN in there, and you have ABC, CBS, and NBC. We were hot.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And we would add a million viewers would switch over at 10 o'clock at night.
No matter what they were watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would have fun because we enjoyed what we were doing and had enough success so that we could stay keep doing it.
Sure. The one thing I remember telling my mother is, because my desk was not always the most organized, when I walked into Walter's office, I said, "Look at this. I mean, look at the success of this man, and it's okay that my desk is a little messy."
Sloppy piled. Well, and the newspapers are worse. They have the, you know, piles of old newspapers.
Yes.
Almost to the ceiling.
Yes. I shared a desk with Walter here for a little bit and realized there's there's something to the genius of it all, the way everything is spread out and piled all over the place.
There is. That's your creative process.
That is the creative process. And you've always had your hands in so many things, and the Decades Channel, and I so enjoy this. It's on the CBS digital subchannels across the country. It's just a great way to capture a moment in time and really talk about every aspect of that time in space.
It's an hour four times a day. We repeat four times a day.
Yeah.
And it is made possible by the fact that we can dig into the archives, which fill several warehouses in New York. And I said, are you sure that they're going to let us go in and do this? Just the physical act of, you know, finding it. It's like that last scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, yep, we'll try that. They had to put on 5 additional people.
Wow.
In order to get the tape, dub the tape off. But, you know, it was also good because that's valuable stuff.
Absolutely.
They were going to have to digitize it someday.
Sure.
And we are, not only is it just interesting to do, but discovering. It's almost like, you know, the dinosaur scientists
sure.
are now hunting dinosaurs in the back rooms of the museums among the bones that were not able to be displayed.
Right.
And they'll actually see evolution take place as one species develops a bone. Paul Sereno did that. And so we'll say, okay, we'd like to do the inauguration or the party of JFK in, you know, when he became president in 60. Okay, so we don't know what's coming. They don't know what they're sending, but they go to the label, and so we get in and put up the party. Here is Don Rickles at his peak doing an hour that no one has ever seen because it wasn't carried on the air.
Oh, interesting.
And you have JFK sitting there.
Wow.
You do not have Jackie. Why? Jackie learned about that time that JFK was carrying on with Marilyn Monroe. And she didn't, she was embarrassed, and she wasn't going to let anybody
sure.
see her show up at
of
the
course.
Same party
of
where
course.
Marilyn was coming. So,
going back to Rickles, I interviewed him last year on his 90th birthday. I actually went to Vegas and sat down
wow.
with him. It was a thrill. I mean, he's just a legend in my mind as well.
And
but I know, you know, Sinatra back then was very tight with JFK. So I'm sure that's how he got Rickles got to do the Reagan inaugural years ago is
yeah.
because of Sinatra said, if you don't use Don, you don't have me.
Well, and Sinatra produced the JFK.
Right. That's
so
right.
here yeah. he produced 2 of the inaugural parties.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah. And I was actually over at Weigel Broadcasting about a week and a half ago and saw, you know, the Decades Room, which has the big board with all the moments in time that are happening for that year or that day, and then the Time magazines and Newsweeks laid out all over the place. So there's definitely – you're really looking back at history and really putting together a phenomenal broadcast.
Well, and developing a new platform. We had every inaugural speech
that
went
that.
Back to Kennedy. So we had 14.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, no, nobody's going to watch them all, but it'll be a good education project. I started watching, and I didn't want to pull myself
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
They're very interesting. The styles are different. And the similarities between phrases as if they watched each other.
Yeah.
And then and you could tell how the administration and even the country was changing.
Yeah.
Until we got to Donald Trump.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah.
And that came from outside the box.
Well, and then you have some presidents that are quoting other presidents in a lot of those categories or taking words from other presidents to inspire. And it was very fascinating to watch.
Yeah. Clinton quoted Reagan
with
the line that government is not the solution, government is the problem. So.
Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Pretty amazing. That's Decades, and you can catch that on the CBS Digital subchannel. And then you're here. You're here. You're hanging out at WGN, and now you're the voice, legendary voice of this station, this iconic station. It's
finally,
pretty cool.
My dream come true.
yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
We should credit Chris Duffy, who is your technical man. Who does a miracle worker.
Oh, you sound fabulous. It's great to see. And it's great to see you in the hallways here. The legendary Bill Curtis. Bill, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
And Josh, it's good to be with you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Here we go. All right, it's 720 WGN.